From out of the city. December 3rd, 2005. My special guest this week, British poet and author, Dave Tao. Okay, now that we have the echo chamber turned off, this is William F. DeVault, the romantic poet of the internet, coming to you from the City of Legends Podcasting Center at cityoflegends.com. It's a pleasure to introduce to you, for the first time ever, our weekly podcast, which will consist of not only my works and discussions of poetry, but also special guests. This week we are extremely honored to have British poet and author Dave Taub. Dave and I have known each other for some time. He wrote a rather pleasant review of my work for Poetry Now, a recently defunct British poetry publication. He's an international journalist, well-respected, and one heck of a good poet, and a nice guy to get to know. So tonight we're going to try and get to know him a little bit through one of his poems, and we're going to discuss a few other things. And the first thing we're going to get to, before we get to our guest, is the title of this podcast series, From Out of the City. From Out of the City was originally the name of my second book, put out by Writers Club Press, and the title of the poem itself that was featured in that book and later featured in a couple other publications. And what I'm going to do for you, rather than do a straight read of it, as I would normally do, is I'm going to do a breakdown, a deconstruction, if you will, as we go, so that you know what it actually means and where it's coming from. Because this poem has achieved a lot of attention over the last 4 or 5 years, because there's some mistakes that people make about presuming the context of this work. And I'm going to clear those up tonight before we get on to the other portions of our show. The first line of the poem is, "From out of the city came words." That speaks for itself. The city I'm speaking about is both an abstraction and my own poetry website, which has been around since 1996, which is called the City of Legends. So, from out of the city came words. Small words. Words like lead pellets, ringing on armor, stinging on flesh, and carrying a message of rage and honor defended. Okay, I'm just being descriptive about the kind of words. Words that hit hard, like lead pellets, that make a sound when they hit barriers, ringing on armor, that you feel when they connect with you, stinging on flesh, and carrying a message of rage and honor defended. Rage is a very big word in my works. And when I speak of rage in my works, I'm not speaking of anger 9 times out of 10. I'm speaking of fire. The French word rage means fire. Our word, our English word, courage, which I often spell as two separate words, cour or heart, and rage, fire, is French for the fire of the heart. So when I speak of rage, I speak of fire, of passion. So these words from out of the city are carrying a message of passion and honor defended. They stand for something. They express something. The prophet spoke in broken syntax. I know in light of the political events of the last few years, there are those who would interpret that as having something to do with Muslim fundamentalism. Nothing could be further from the truth. This poem was not written in a reaction to Muslim fundamentalism, but in reaction to the New Age profligation of individuals who claim to be carrying spiritual truths. We are inundated every day in our TV shows, our newspapers, our magazines, with pretend prophets, pretend psychics, those who claim to have intimate and special knowledge of the way the universe works and what God is thinking and what we should be doing with 10% of our money. The truth of the matter is, I don't believe 99% of what I hear, because there are ways that you can test what's being said. The prophet spoke in broken syntax. I'm saying that the person who is the prophet, or are the prophets, speaking in broken syntax, that means that they're not even making sense. The facts spoke for themselves in time. Well, how do you test a prophet? Well, you find out if their prophecies come true. Even the Christian and Jewish Holy Bible expressed that very view. And he was carried to the square to be stoned to death in accordance with the law. Hey, that's scriptural. Someone's making a prophecy and it doesn't come true, they were to be executed as a false prophet. Sorry, I don't write the rules, I just report them. The third stanza. Morning slid over the horizon as if on rails invisible, and split the night like Trinity. Morning slid over the horizon as if on rails invisible. In other words, that sun comes up on track that you can't see, but it comes up, and it comes up with a surety and a smoothness and a grace. Have you ever watched a sunrise or a sunset? There's just a beauty in the way it happens. I remember watching the sunset once over the Pacific Ocean with Bridget, and just the way it descended and vanished into the ocean, the change of colors and even the shape of the sun as it was distorted by the atmospheric thickness. Just remarkable. I mean, you cannot help but be affected by such a sight. And split the night like Trinity. For those of you who remember your history, Trinity was the name of the first atomic bomb test down in New Mexico. And when they set that off, there was this brilliant, brilliant, bright light that split the night. It was like the sun had been unleashed on Earth. And that's what I mean. Morning comes in a bright flash. Infinity seemed possible except for the silence of the waking world, one eye open. Everything seems possible except for the silence of the waking world, one eye open. When we first wake, we're just examining our world. We're reacclimatizing ourselves to it. The universe, for a moment, doesn't completely make sense to us. And that's how the morning is. That's how the new day is. That's how the new life is. Then, the fourth stanza. Mourn the night and rise. Forget about yesterday. Just get up. You know, think about it, but just get on with your life. Rise to your feet and climb the hill. You always said you'd climb before the end of all things. This is a very intimate passage to me. My grandfather and I, my namesake, William F. Duvall, William Francis Duvall, when I was a young boy, he took me on a walk out behind his house on Harmony Grove near Morgantown, West Virginia. And just as we were getting ready to crest the hill, Grandma called to us to come back for dinner. So we turned around. We never went over that hill together. And a few days later, summer vacation was over. We never got to finish our walk. I left, went home. At the time, my family was living in Michigan. And later on that year, Grandpa Duvall died. So I never got to go over that hill with him. And when I had grown up, one of the first things I did upon coming back to Morgantown was I went over that hill to see what was on the other side. So I rose to my feet and I climbed the hill. I always said I'd climb before the end of all things. I had promised myself I would do that. For it is upon you, even in the optimism of dawn. Yes, the end of all things is upon you, even in the optimism of dawn. No matter how optimistic or positive we may feel about our lives or the world, there will be an end one day. We don't have control over that. We may have control over when or the nature of it. But things will end. Things do end. I repeat that same opening line in the fifth stanza. Mourn the night and rise. Rise to your vision. Rise. At this point, we're getting emphatic. We're ordering the reader to their feet. The afterlife is not waiting for you, but you for it. And the madness of martyrs may call too soon. This is where we start getting into trouble. People take the reference to the prophet in an earlier stanza, combine this with the mention of the madness of martyrs, and say, oh, this is about the World Trade Center. No, it has nothing to do with this. This was written 3 or 4 years before that incident, It's not prophetic in any sense. I am no prophet. What I was saying was, the afterlife is not waiting for you. Death isn't waiting for you. You're waiting for it, especially if you're not rising and rising to your vision and moving forward with your life. And the madness of martyrs may call it too soon. There are martyrs in every field of endeavor. There are martyrs to every cause you can imagine, and people willing to kill themselves and to kill you for whatever their madness is. You can't predict when someone is going to decide you're the person who stands between them and their vision of the universe. And that is madness. Next stanza. Mourn the night and rise. Spread your bastard wings and catch the feral winds that come on the sun's fire to sweep away the night into small shadow piles in corners. Yes, spread your wings, your bastard wings, because to have wings, one must be base-born to some degree, must be a crossbreed, must be a hybrid of a normal human being and something else, some purpose that comes to them, probably a purpose that others may not always understand, may even look down upon you for. And that's why those wings are bastard wings. Catch the feral winds, the wild winds that come on the sun's fire. Right after the sun comes up, particularly over the desert, the wind comes blasting as the air is heated. The winds that come on the sun's fire to sweep away the night into shadow piles and corners. The wind comes with the sun and it moves the shadows away. Now the final stanza. From out of the city came words. Final words. Words like Eden, Gethsemane, Golgotha. These are three places out of the Bible, the place where human life began, the place where Jesus had his moment of doubt and resolution, and Golgotha, the place of the skull where Jesus was crucified. These are places where decisions were made, where changes occurred, where individuals mourned their nights and rose, where they took their vision and stepped forward and made decisions that affected their lives and the lives of those around them and all of civilization. So from out of the city came words, final words, words like Eden, Gethsemane, Golgotha, and then the silence, the violence of indifference. I keep repeating the phrase "and then" to build to the finish, and then I drop it. The silence, the violence of indifference. Because indifference, not caring, lacking passion, lacking rage, lacking vision, is perhaps the greatest violence you can commit in this life. And that is what the poem is about. A few years back, I taught a little class on AOL, on America Online, called The Passionate Craft, which is about poetry. Because poetry is a passionate craft. Writing poetry without passion, without rage, without fire, without vision, is like making very nice drawings. It may not be art, but it can be technically fine. But art is that which stirs the heart and the soul, creates a visceral response, creates an emotional response. And that is the essence of poetry. Ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, the remarkable David Taub performing his work, Is There Anybody There?
Is there anybody there? Cried the child of dreams. Is there anybody listening to me? In the darkness of the night, in the brightness of the day, in the moments of aloneness with no others there to play, is there anybody there? Cried the child once again, and then paused in hope for someone to reply. In the quiet of the moment, in the quiet of the pause, in between the child's questions, in between the child's calls, when a pin drop would have echoed if a pin had hit the floor, When the child had almost chosen not to call out any more, first a whisper, then a trickle, like a shallow running stream, was there anybody there? Or was it just the child's dream? Wide-eyed wonder, ears now straining, sounding half like distant raining, or a breeze that blows in cornfields. Is there anybody there? In a whisper, in a murmur, in a softly spoken tone, like a feather falling slowly, like a honeybee's quiet drone. Barely audible, but plaintive, came a word at first, then more. Yes, I hear you in the silence. And the child was in awe. Who is there? Who is there? Cried the child of dreams, half in wonder, half in fear, as the voice drew near. Nearer still, and still much nearer, growing far more clearer than the murmur that had started, sounding half like distant rain. I am here, called the voice. I am answering your call, which was rather like a pebble, causing ripples in a pool. Ripples spreading far and further, first just one, then many more. And your calls were quite incessant, washing up upon my shore. Will you tell me who you are? Asked the child of dreams. What I mean is, will you tell me what's your name? Half in wonder, half in fear, for the voice seemed very near, both excited and quite frightened that the voice would disappear, asked again the child of dreams. Will you tell me who you are? And a pin drop could have echoed in the pause. Like a rustling of leaves that were scattered under trees by the turn of autumn's blowing and the summer season ending. Like the snuffling of a mole as its whiskers fill the air. Barely heard, but if one's quiet, then one knows that something's there. Well, the voice again now whispered, as if chuckling with a grin, that is quite a thing you ask me. Let me see, where to begin? It was as if the world stopped spinning, as if waves paused from their lapping on the pebbles, on the beaches, not a grain of sand disturbed. Tell me, please, cried the child. I would really like to know, what do other people call you? As if other people know. Hush now, child, said the voice. Child of dreams, now hush, said the voice like a mother combing hair with a brush, or the stroking of a cheek to a soft lullaby. Firm, but patient, kind, and caring. Even those a child was wearing. All these questions, oh, such questions. Where shall I begin? So the child of dreams settled down and was quiet, eagerly awaiting what the voice would tell. Such a hush, such a silence, such a long, long pause. Then a whooshing as if water from cascading waterfalls. Well, the voice said again, I am not just called one name, although perhaps they all mean the same. Now the child of dreams was quite puzzled and surprised. Many names for just one being, many names for just one voice. Was it she, the child of dreams, who would have to make a choice? And the voice, well, it just chuckled, as if laughing at a joke, knowing what the child was thinking, though the child never spoke. Will you tell me of those names? Asked the child of dreams. And do you have a name that you prefer? Mine was given me, you see, by my father and my mother. And the same is also true of my sister, my brother, Then the voice gave out a chuckle. Yes, I'm sometimes known by those. Sometimes father, sometimes mother. Some say sister, some say brother. Though you might not think them names, and I guess you would be right. But I'm often called those things in the middle of the night. Then some had the title holy. Others had in earth or sky. Oh, so many names and titles, said the voice with a sigh. Some refer to me as many, and then others simply one. If you think this is confusing, well, I've hardly just begun. But who are you, or what are you? Asked the child of dreams, who was puzzled and confused by the reply. I can't see you. Why is that? Are you frightened to appear? Are you just imagination? Or are you really here? Clearly now the child of dreams was perplexed, but still persisted. Many names and many titles, so the strange voice had insisted. But just what or who the voice was still remained a mystery, like a riddle in a puzzle in a maze. I am here and everywhere, but some say I am no more. People argue and debate. Foolish people go to war. That is tragic. Oh, such folly. Yet some think it makes them holy. Then they blame in my name, if a name they give to me. I will never understand such absurd stupidity. And the voice on saying that seemed to be in grievous pain. But that didn't stop the child from her questions once again. Why do people fight about you? Don't they know this makes you sad? Is it just because they're foolish? Or perhaps they're just a bad? And the voice just had to chuckle. That is something I don't know. I've wondered, I've pondered, I've watched all that man squandered, I've listened to man preaching, and the many forms of teaching. But what puzzles me the most? Well, he simply doesn't learn. And if man can't understand that all wars are insane, how on earth can he learn that I have no single name? Then the child understood what the voice had said. This was no imagination, not a voice in her head. Now I know who you are, smiled the child of dreams, and your name is quite safe with me. In a whisper, in a murmur, in a softly spoken tone, like a feather falling slowly, like a honeybee's quiet drone, like a rustling of leaves that were scattered under trees by the turn of autumn's blowing and the summer season ending, like the snuffling of a mole as its whiskers fill the air, barely heard. But if one's quiet, then one knows that something's there. Barely audible, but plaintive, came the voice's final words. Child of dreams, I know you know me. And then nothing more was heard. And a pin drop would have echoed if a pin had hit the floor, as the child of dreams and the voice were no more.
Thank you for that, Dave. Well, I see it's just about time for us to wrap up for this week. Please, if you're interested in Dave's work, finding out about his books, the projects he's involved with, or the man himself, go to his website at www.ukpoet.com. And for more information on yours truly, William F. Duvall, you can find me on the web at www.cityoflegends.com. And don't hesitate to drop by, check out some of our other podcasts, take a look at my books, read some poetry. So, until next week, this is William F. Duvall, coming to you from out of the city.